It's our weekly catch-up with the National Party's Denise Lee.
Denise, hi.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. Very excited to be talking with you.
Thank you, Laura, and likewise. And I'm just picking up on the old finger guns reference before. Does that do it for you? No, that terrifies me. That terrifies me too. That's, it'd have to be in the context of like a comedy show or a comedy act, but... Yeah,
I mean, finger guns is just kind of those things where you're like, I don't know if I'm ready to deal with that level of intensity in my life.
So
someone who can come at me with.
Tell the boys in the studio, yeah, nah.
Shall do. So we're going to jump straight into it. Auditor General is conducting an investigation into KiwiBuild funding, and this is coming after National's kind of concerns about it. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, so as we know, the KiwiBuild policy is under review and has been since they've signalled that in January.
Yeah.
And then you've got this whole layer of concern because it appears that the cabinet paper that went through on KiwiBuild made it clear that the taxpayer underwrites. This is the scheme which guarantees developers a minimum price for houses that don't sell. The cabinet paper was for homes sold off the plans and offered for sale in the first instance, right?
Mm.
But now we're looking at KiwiBuild underwriting developments where apartments were already complete. And that doesn't stack up. If that's what the cabinet paper was supposed to do, why are we looking at something different? And of course, as you said, the Auditor General agrees and is going to investigate.
Mm. So are you thinking that government has mismanaged funding?
Well, it's a definite concern, and we will be highly interested in what the Auditor General says. You can't, run contrary to what their own cabinet had approved funding for. And when you're looking at taxpayer cash very potentially being used to underwrite KiwiBuild houses to the tune of $660 million, a lot of money, we need the answers. When taxpayer dollars are what might be compensating for financial loss on homes, hey, it's a serious issue.
Absolutely. Oftentimes when this conversation comes up around KiwiBuild, much of the commentary goes into discussing how this scheme has really benefited property developers. But in order to have those properties built, you do need to incentivize for property developers to want to get on board with this. We've talked about this a bit before. Do you think this is potentially where things have gone awry?
Yeah, well, I mean, you could say this is incentivizing on steroids, going far beyond what anyone, including Cabinet and the Cabinet paper, had envisaged. So if this is heading into territory that has not been approved, has not been thought of, has not even been earmarked for by Cabinet itself, then why on earth is this happening? And we do need answers, and I hope... quite quickly from the Auditor General. And look, there's other effects of this, right, Laura? I mean, potentially this could reduce the number of opportunities first home buyers have to buy because there's not going to be flexibility in the pricing without causing a potential loss of, taxpayer dollars. So it's not just, oh, look, how is the funds being managed? What's the impact or the windfall to developers, it's also the perverse effect on the very people that KiwiBuild is trying to supposedly help. If you've got real lack of flexibility in pricing because of all this, what is that going to mean to those really important and legitimate first home buyers?
Mm.
So look, the whole thing is really concerning. They were struggling anyway. It's why they announced a review of it, a reset, a rejig, whatever you want to call it. But now to see that there's confirmation that the work that we've been doing is kicking off an investigation by the Auditor General, it's a serious business.
And on that note of how that affects the people actually trying to get onto the property market in the first place, I mean, Kiwi Build was targeted towards that and attempting to reduce the cost of these houses by having a more competitive market. What do you have to say about that?
Well, it's not really working like it was supposed to work, or they said it was going to work, right? So by their own admission, the scheme's failing. Simple as that. And we're yet to see that. They've announced, I mean, we're, what, July now? They announced in January that they're going to relook at this thing, rejig it. And instead of seeing what that entails, we've now got an Auditor General asking the hard questions. So how on earth any of this is a successful scheme is beyond me. And it's time for the public to understand that it's not their role to underwrite developers having a windfall.
When Jacinda Ardern was discussing this earlier, she didn't particularly want to comment about Kiwi Build until she finds out what the Auditor General has to say. But she did say that this government is building more houses than any government since the 1970s. Is that a fair comment?
Well, many of the, and this is where we're very happy to some have sort of tried to twist this as though this is a problem, but many of them had started under us, Laura. So if you look at the Housing New Zealand, the HLC program, many of the homes that they're now pulling into this big, what they're calling Kāinga Ora entity, or, they're basically hiding the Kiwi Build program inside a giant housing entity. Well, a lot of the build there had started under us. Mm-hmm. Huge Housing New Zealand program. And Hobsonville Land Company, now Homes, Land and Community, HLC. Look, we're really struggling to see how these numbers stack up. Kiwi Build's been a big failure. The numbers, we're supposed to be getting, 10,000 a year, and we're barely into the 100, let alone the hundreds.
I might just jump on to our next subject now, so electric vehicles. With the Clean Vehicle Initiative, National has presented some concerns around that. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, well, there's kind of two things going here. One is the fee imposed on vehicles with high emissions, and then subsidising those who purchase low emissions vehicles, right? So here's the thing, though, and we can talk about that in just a straight out subsidy scheme and so on, and the tax scheme, but I'm so confused about, I'm trying to think of the cars that students may use or buy, or, little runabouts in Auckland because you don't want to gas guzzle too much. So the Suzuki Swifts, the Mazda 2 Demios, the Nissan Titas, all those little tiny runabouts, a lot of those are going to be on a banned list because they're not safe. They're 1 and 2 star safety ratings. But at the same time, they're going to be captured in this sort of tax or subsidised scheme. So on the one hand, you're kind of banning cars that on the other hand are going to be sort of subsidised. You get more money for driving something that takes less gas.
Well, I mean, this is primarily about importation here, correct?
Yes, yeah, it is. And it does kick in at certain years. But let's just take, for instance, the Suzuki Swift and Mazda 2 Demios, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the government working group is considering banning those cars because they're 1 and 2 star safety ratings, and for the Suzuki Swift it's a pre-2014 one, but both of those cars will be cheaper under Julianne Genta's fee base, that's the term that's being used, or rebate scheme. So on the one hand you want to ban them, but on the other hand you want to make them cheaper because of emissions. So there's just a lot of confusion. We don't think she's going about this the right way. If you want to get more an increase in electric vehicles, which we totally would get behind, and I've got some numbers about what we did over 3 years. It's incentives, not penalties, that you need. If you want to look at solutions, give people incentives to get to EVs, not the whole penalty, sort of punitive penalty regime, which quite frankly hits some really low and middle income Kiwis in their back pocket. It doesn't make sense.
But just in terms of importation, it just seems to be a bit of a stretch that every Kiwi is going for an imported vehicle, and saying that we're penalizing the little guy for that. It just seems to be a bit far-fetched.
Well, I guess you'd have to have a crystal ball for buyer behavior. And for who's going to choose to get newly imported vehicles in what year. But without sort of having that crystal ball, it's still, you know, we know that people will be going for vehicles which suits their lifestyle, their family, if they've got a larger family and so on. None of this is going to stack up in practicality if you take a punitive penalty lens on things, Laura. You know, you've got the Motor Vehicle Industry Association chief executive. He's saying it's a draconian way of reducing emissions. Better to look at, and here's a solution, better to look at a simple pricing signal. In other words, incentivize, subsidize buying the right vehicles, not penalizing those who don't. And especially when you've got the minister saying, oh, look, this is all going to be revenue neutral. Well, actually, it's not. How's this? So my team has figured out that if the government's plan puts an extra 26,000 cleaner cars on our roads, so, you know, that's what they'd be looking for, 26,000 cleaner cars on our roads, the scheme will raise 85 million more in taxes than it pays out in subsidies. So you could bluntly say this is a giant tax grabbing scheme.
But so that taxation. So the taxation is meant to go into making sure those cars can be subsidized, correct?
Well, no, because it'd be 85 million more than what it's paying out in the subsidies. So the subsidies would still go, but they're still getting $85 million more in their purse than those subsidies. So what are they going to do with the $85 million? Because they've already done what they said they were going to do, right, is try and subsidise cleaner cars. But they're gaining $85 million more. That's just one example if you've got that 26,000 more cleaner cars on the road. So what I'm trying to say here is that it's not revenue neutral. It's actually looking like a tax and grab scheme. And I'm not sure that that's the way to go about it, a sneaky tax grab.
We'll have to look into that a little bit more. When it comes to electric vehicles, though, in many regards, people see this as a necessity in order to treat a climate emergency that we're facing right now. So by critiquing this, what could be seen as a small step, are you potentially hindering progress?
No, I don't think so, because there's no one saying no more electric vehicles. And I made reference to some of the numbers that we've got around what we did when we were in government, Laura. So over 3 years, 2016 to 2019, I think about it, that some of it we weren't in government, but starting in 2016, there was a jump from 1,400 EVs to 14,000. So the numbers are going up. No one's saying, oh, look, you know, this is a debate about are EVs worth it. Of course they are. And when you've got that massive jump, are we not already looking at, some inroads into this without this punitive penalty scheme, which will hit low and middle-income middle income Kiwis. There's no two ways about it. Not everyone can afford nicely imported EVs, and especially not in that top range.
I did just get a text in, and someone, I might get you to answer this if you're okay with that.
Say that again, Laura.
I did just get a text in on this subject, and I was wondering if you'd be okay to answer this one from a listener.
Yeah, sure.
So someone said, didn't National raise taxes on cigarettes to drive down smoking? Aren't they calling the kettle black on EVs?
Yeah, look, I think conflating issues around severe health and smoking and EVs, I'm not so sure. We stand by what we did with EVs when Simon Bridges himself was our transport minister. And I've just given you some figures around how EVs have gone up massively in a three-year period, 1,400 to 14,000. For us, it's about the best way to go about getting EVs on roads.
I'm just going to shift on to my last question of the day, the personal one. We were talking about Star Wars earlier, and so I'm curious, do you have a favorite Star Wars movie?
A favorite Star Wars?
Yes.
Look, I can't go past Return of the Jedi.
Oh.
For me, it's a classic. I love Star Wars. I reckon, I really like X-Men. That's right up there for me. But Star Wars is just so classic.
Yeah.
Return of the Jedi, because I just think it's the quintessential Star Wars. If you could... didn't get to look at any other except for that, you'd know who the characters are, who the big players are, and you could die happy.
Wow. My producer is giving you like a clap off to the side, so nice.
Excellent.
Nice choice. Looking forward to talking with you next week, Denise.
Okay, Laura, you take care. See you guys.
See ya.
The National Party's Denise Lee on 95 BFM.